this is their first day of 2013 year-end session, or Hutsu session, and feels like we've been here before. I just counting up, I think it's probably about 20 sessions we've done here since over the last 10 years. There used to be a time when I used to count up the number of sessions I'd done, but kind of like notches, and then I lost count somewhere. So anyway, so it's always helpful like in the first day of session just to reiterate a little bit about the form and how we practice, just to give a bit of general guideline or reminder on the form and why we're here, and just because it's quite simple. Sometimes when you're in the middle of session, the practice seems quite complicated, but really it is quite simple, and it's those three main aspects of what we do with our body, how we breathe, and how we work with the mind. Basically, they are the foundations of the next 4 days. So, because we spend a lot of time sitting, zazen, then we have to, it helps us to really pay attention to the way we sit, just this physically. And so, a lot of that's quite simple too. You know, we all pretty much know how to sit. But we spend a lot of our time either hunched over a desk or hunched over working, or we're all probably pretty I guess guilty of a poor posture. And then when we come to sit, we sit down cross-legged or kneeling, which is unusual, and then we sit for long periods of time. Trying to stay upright, which is hard on the muscles if it's not your usual way of operating, and we also tend to develop tension around the legs, around the shoulders, around the neck. So the basic, the basic guidelines of sitting are around that basic foundation first of all, but just be sure your cushion is. Gives you enough height and support so that your bottom is able, if you're sitting cross-legged, so you've got enough of a tilt in the pelvis, so your backbone has its natural lumbar curves, and then the spine is stacked one on top of the other, and the head can just really sit nicely right on top of whatever that last joint is, the hinge point. It always helps to remember too, just that lengthening of the back of the neck. It doesn't have to be anything exceptional, but just that tends to draw the chin in, and then reduces that inclination to slump. And doing that, then the body, and then really important is kind of to relax. And you've got that kind of upward movement, and then that relaxation down. So the shoulders and the rib cage, and just relax down with gravity. And the breathing, the breathing is we don't practice any particular kind of way to breathe. The breathing just is what comes naturally. Hopefully, if we are a bit more relaxed, then the breath will drop a bit from the chest area and become more of a belly breath. But it's it's like trying to control a child or a dog, and it does what it wants to do. And then the mind, so that's the real conundrum you know, how to work with the mind. And so we have, you know, various practices that we work with the mind, but they all have the same, I guess, outcome or goal, which is about being present with, you know, this particular experience. So but what's important is that whatever we do, whatever kind of practice we do, is that, you know, we've created this container over the next 4 days with that one specific purpose, really, which is, you know, in simple terms, about being present. And being present isn't about trying to find some presence that is about trying to attain something, but it's about allowing. It's about really. It's very difficult to describe any kind of spiritual practice as doing something, because it's a bit of a tautology. But the real the practice is about not doing other things. So in other words, it's kind of hard to be present or to be one or to be enlightened or whatever it is. But we can practice not doing the other stuff. And the way we practice not doing that is by letting go of attachment to our thinking, to our thoughts and ideas. And that's basically practice in a nutshell. And so this session here commemorates the enlightenment of Shakyamuni Buddha, and there's all these stories around Shakyamuni Buddha's life, and I've talked about this a number of times before. You probably read it yourself about his growth as a child, and then encountering sickness, old age, suffering. And death, and about his own desire to put his mind at ease, and struggles through it with asceticism, and never really finding what he was after, and so the story goes that he sat under a peepal tree, and he said that this is the end of the line. I'm putting myself here, and I've got two outcomes. One is either great enlightenment or death. And luckily for us, after the morning on the seventh day, morning of the eighth day, he looked up and saw Venus, and then and said, wonder of wonders, the great earth and all beings, to paraphrase, are perfect and complete just as we are. But because of our upside down thinking, we fail to see it. And it's in some ways, that's the foundation of Buddhism. And it's really tempting for us to kind of romanticize that awakening has been the fruit of a lot of striving, and there's all those stories, wonderful stories around the Mara's armies attacking the Buddha, and temptations of sex and power and fame and gain and money. If only he would, get off his seat and go back to the world. And it's kind of tempting so in some ways, you think the stories are around creating something that's going to last through time, so that we can actually have some kind of visceral memory of it, and it's a great story, and stories do last. But it also has that, kind of negative side, is that we tend to think this is something that is difficult, or it's something that only happens to other people, and a very long time ago. And it kind of creates kind of an otherness to that experience. You know, and here, But his first statement, that first statement is like, everyone is perfect and complete as they are, is, you know, that's it in a nutshell. Perfect and complete. And we tend to think perfect is some kind of perfection, because we tend to use the word perfect as to mean some kind of idealized state that kind of is unattainable. But that perfect and complete is this experience here. And I guess that's the challenge of Sesshin, is that really is not to bring anything in. In other words, that we don't practice is not to create anything. And the practice is to let that stuff go and allow what's here to manifest itself. And that can sound difficult too, you know, it's like, so what's here? When you say, well, this thing, say, this is it. But what kind of this is that? That's when you're going to get to that second level. You say, well, yeah, I can appreciate that this is it on an intellectual level, but when you start practicing and you sit and you look at it and go, well, yes, this, but which, what kind of this is that? And that's really the juice of practice. But again, it's like cooking a meal. It's like you get here and the ingredients are all here. And everything's here already. You know, there's the sounds. There's the smell of incense or BO. There's light, you can see things, there's thoughts that come and go, it's kind of bodily sensations that come and go, you know, and it's like, apart from that, if you look, there's nothing else. I haven't found anything yet, apart from those about six senses. So when you in Sesshin, you get the opportunity to experience that constant flowering of experience. And look as hard as you might, you won't find anything apart from that. So the practice here is about not bringing anything in, and using exactly what is at hand. And that's why it's kind of simple in a sense, is like that letting go is the practice, and that's what makes it direct. And letting go is, on a simple bit, is just when we start thinking about something, and when we string about two or three thoughts together, or 10 minutes, or half an hour, or whatever, when we notice that, is noticing it, breathing in and coming back. So whether it's the breath, koan, counting, whatever it is that you're using as a point of a touch point to this kind of visceral experience. It really is that simple. Really is. You know, so when we get confused, that really it's about that, just letting go and returning. And that if you read all the Zen stories, all the stories of the Buddha, then it's about letting go and appreciating this experience. That's quite challenging, and it requires, I guess, a lot of faith. But, you know, the reason I suspect that we're all here is because we kind of think it's done a little bit of reading, a bit of sitting. And it feels like there's some kind of truth to that. But the real essence is that practice. You know, it's putting yourself back in. I was sitting last night and I had this kind of knot of, I guess it was fear or something, I don't know. It's kind of like 4 days of this. What happens if I let go of thinking? Oh, it'll be really boring, Phil. Boring, I hate being bored. And something just kind of lodged itself there. It's kind of this, and it wouldn't go away. And it's still there a bit, actually. You know, but again, that's, for me, that's just what it is. You know, there's this little kind of knot of fear just to the right of whatever that is, that here. Who knows why? But there it is, you know, but the practice is about, it's not about changing any of that. And we're so conditioned to wanting to change, wanting to fix, wanting to be some other way, to attain to some kind of standard that I don't even know where I got my standards from. No idea. But there's, I guess, unexamined assumptions that there's a certain way I need to feel or way I need to be, and especially when it comes down to something that's really important as spiritual practice and enlightenment. Is a very good standard that I've created for myself. And the problem is when you sit down and say shame, you know, you're really encountering all that stuff. And none of it can seem quite to match up to that experience of Shakyamuni Buddha, whatever that was. And yet, every word of Dharma will point you to the fact that your experience, you know, is the experience of the Buddha. The Buddha's experience was this experience, is this experience. You know, so that in the practice is trusting in that. And trusting in that is letting go of supports of thinking or attachment to thinking. That's that kind of trust, and it's that you need to do those kind of trust exercises to do them at school where you'd stand on the stage and then close your eyes and fall back and hope that folks down below are going to catch you. And that's that faith, is that letting go of those supports. And for me, it's like, so I let go of the supports and merely, boom, there comes up a little bit of fear. Or a lot of fear. You know, and who knows why that's there. Yeah, it's a fairly common occurrence. It's like sometimes we might have resistance to letting go of thinking. We might might come up with boredom, might come up with anger. All that kind of stuff is when you start pulling away that those constant supports that we've used, then that emotional reaction. It's a fairly common experience. You know, again, the practice is just allow that to be there as well. That experience to be there. Yeah, so Sashin, isn't it time about, you know, working on our issues? And it's allowing those issues just to be there. There's a little koan for a read today. This is from the Blue Cliff Record, and it's called Gobblers of Dregs. So the as all koans do, they start off with an introduction or a preface, then there's the koan, and then there's a verse. Sorry, the introduction says, so the great capacity of Buddhas and Zen masters is entirely under his control. The lifeline of humanity and divinity is totally subject to his direction. With a casual statement, even a single word, he startles the crowd and stirs the masses. With a single device, even a single object, he smashes chains and knocks off fetters. Meeting transcendental potential, he brings up transcendental matters. Now tell me, who has ever been like this? Babaku said to the assembly, you are all gobblers of dreams. If you go on like this, where will you ever have today? Don't you know that there are no Zen teachers in all of China? Then a monk came forward and said, and what about those who order followers and lead communities all over the place? Babaku said, I don't say there's no Zen, just that there are no teachers. The verse says, cold, severe, his solitary mien does not take pride in itself. Solemnly dwelling in the sea of the world, he distinguishes dragons and snakes. Even the Emperor of China was treated lightly. Thrice he personally ran afoul of those claws and fangs. So this is about Master Obaku, who was a teacher of Rinzai, and Obaku, you may have heard this before, he was something like 7 feet tall, and a very tall, I guess the Chinese weren't that big at that time, but he was very big, and apparently he was a very stubborn man as well, and he on statues of him, you see this kind of lump on his forehead, was apparently because he was so stubborn, he made himself bow all the time, and so he kept a callus on his forehead over all his bowing. And, so he's teaching the assembly, and he says, you're all gobblers of dregs. Those gobblers of dregs, actually, I think the original translation was lees, lees on the bottom of whatever comes out of the brewing process, whether it's grape skins or the detritus from the yeast, etc. So you're all gobblers of dregs, all the gobblers of the stuff that's the sludge at the bottom of the good stuff. Gobblers, that's a good word. If you go on like that, if you continue to gobble all the shit, when will you ever have, when will you ever appreciate your life? But don't you know that there are no Zen teachers in all of China? And then someone comes forward and says, well, duh. Yeah. What about, Zen Mountain Monastery, Zen Mountain Center? What about, Zen Center Los Angeles? What about all these, this place here? What are you talking about? And Obaku said, I don't say there's no Zen, just that there are no teachers. It's kind of interesting statement. One side is like, well, yeah, it sounds like a pretty boring kind of koan, because we all know that. You know, it's like, nothing to teach, yada, yada, yada. But I guess what, to me, it kind of highlights that point that, especially Obaku and Rinzai, Master Rinzai, who was trained by Obaku, has a lot of beautiful sayings where he just basically keeps on reiterating the point about having faith in yourself. Again and again, that comes up. And what do you lack? He says, you lack faith in yourself. And that what do you lack? And that's kind of a constant kind of question for us, because we feel there's a gap, something missing, then we go off looking for something else. We go off looking for something that's going to fill that gap. So we tend to go to, in this case, we've come to a sesshin. We've come to find Zen. the Bhakti says, don't you know there is no Zen teachers in all of China? So it kind of comes down to that conundrum of like, well, okay, I can kind of accept that. But again, the nut, the kernel of it is like, how do we actually go about that? And the real, I guess the real challenge is that, you know, we stand in that place of having all the ingredients here. And I can't teach you anything. You know, so what is it that you have? An abundance. The one thing that Obaku doesn't say, he probably say if he carried on, he would have said, oh, I would also say there's no Zen. Because I'd kind of argue with that. I'd say there are lots of Zen teachers, but there's no Zen. Just in that sense, it's kind of because the challenge is that we still kind of subtly think there is something to attain to that is different from that experience of pain in the legs, and enjoyment of a meal, and pleasant thoughts and unpleasant thoughts. We think there's something else, and we call that Zen. Yeah, to me that's more the subtle thing. So, you know, I don't really have any great wisdom today. And everything is here just like this. And the reason we have like 4 days of Sesshin is because that gives us time to continue aiming at that point. And every aspect of Sesshin gives us that opportunity. Yeah, so when we sit, thoughts come up, we see them, we let them go, we come back. When we walk, same thing. When we eat, it's that constantly guiding that kind of monkey mind. I don't want to be doing anything but this. I'm kind of settling it on this direct experience. So it's those dregs. You know, we don't look for someone else's experience. That's what he's really talking about. Those dregs when we try and match ourselves with someone else's experience. So standing in the place of God, of Buddha. Yeah, it's extremely powerful. You know, this experience that we are right now, you know, that's eternity. And letting go of ideas that it could be any other way, you know, reveal this incredible freedom. So every breath, every step, every random thought, and there's an opportunity just to return to this basic experience. Okay. Right. 3 days to go.